Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
What did you just say? You said awareness is the key?
To all of our issues, challenges, yes.
Right here on the edge. There's no challenges here. There's results here. Brains, we have Agnes Laughlin from Chicago. We're going to talk about something that all of us experienced at one time or another, loneliness. But you can be alone and not be lonely. The anxiety that sets in, the depression that can set in. You know, sometimes people have suicidal thoughts. Sometimes they just feel like they're spiraling out of control and nobody cares for them. But Agnes is spending her golden years working with people to try to get them out of that funk. Okay. She is a retired nurse. She works in the modality of holistics. Originally, we're from Wisconsin. Weren't you born in Wisconsin? What'd you do in Wisconsin?
A retreat.
Oh, retreat. And in Sedona as well, right?
Yes, I'm planning some.
And Brains, she living in the Chi-Town. In the heart of Chicago. And you know it can be rough there in Chicago. So let's welcome her to the edge, Agnes Laughlin. How are you doing, beautiful?
Awesome, awesome. Thank you. I just call myself a joy facilitator.
What'd you call yourself?
A joy facilitator.
A joy facilitator. Okay, well, dial back a little bit. Before you found the actual recipe for success, tell us a little bit about you.
Sure, April. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yes. The brains couldn't wait for a little jolt of happiness.
So, yes, I think my loneliness journey started before I was 8 years old, but I remember distinctly what just 2 weeks before my 8th birthday, I went to live with my brother and sister in an orphanage in Peoria, Illinois. I lived there 4.5 years, and I then transitioned to a foster home before coming to Chicago. So in that, there were a lot of children around me, but I felt like I was alone in a sense, and I was looking for some to help me. And there, right there, right in front of me, were books. So I immediately connected to these books, fairy tales. 8-year-old, I love fairy tales. I love the adventures that always ended happily. I connected later to books, and this will date me. Because back then, yeah, I mean, this was like 1950. When I was 8, it was like 1954, I think.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, a little before we got television.
Oh, now we had television back then for sure. I remember, you know, well, I know I was.
Yeah, well, it wasn't available everywhere. So I started reading books about Sherry Ames Nurse, Nancy Drew. Ooh. So all those books taught me that life could be an exciting adventure. And I was living with these nuns and these rules and regulations, but I vowed to myself I would never be a nun, but life was too much of an opportunity to, you know, not
stay in one place.
Engage, yeah.
let me dial back and ask you, because, you know, you hear about orphanages, but what is it like in an orphanage? Is it like dormitories? Is there a bunch of kids? Do you have rules? I don't understand the.
I have to go back quite a few years to
That's okay.
I do remember, absolutely remember, it was a big building, dormitories, with girls on one section, boys in a completely separate section, and then a separate section for little kids. Like my brother was like three and a half, so he was in the toddler infant section. And we had dormitories. Yeah, we had our own separate. We slept. Life was regimented. It was nuns, and they knew how to keep the ball flowing. So
they kept law and order, that's for sure.
We helped with cleaning, scrubbing floors, dishes, all of that. We had to write lines 200 times. I will put my ex book away. Yeah.
I remember standards, but let me ask a question about how many kids were there?
On my section, I would say probably 20. I don't know. I mean, my favorite memory is standing, you know, most unusual probably for me is to stand with about 20 girls. Three to a spigot brushing our teeth, and the nun would shout out, one in, so that means put your toothbrush, one out.
Oh, wow.
And she'd say, two in, second girl put her toothbrush in to, you know, spit and wash it off. And then she'd say, three in, so there's three of us, three out. So that's how we brushed our teeth. It was, you know.
That's interesting. And then I know that, you know, you had to go to school and they were very strict. So you lived in this orphanage. Where were your parents?
Yeah, my mother was working. My parents both had mental health challenges. And yeah, my mother was what I would call probably dealing with a lot of anxiety. And in those days, people didn't have a lot of awareness. So it's about awareness, of course, how to deal with that. She had three young children and not a lot of what you would call support.
I get it. I totally get it. All right. So then you moved to a foster family. How was that experience for you?
Well, I would say it was, you know, it was a continuation. It was different, but I still had my connection to books, and books was my lifeline, my escape into a world that was just made special for me.
You know, because my aunt had raised about 50 foster children in her life, and she has been such a godsend. But there's a lot of trauma because there's a lot of moving around. There's a lot of uncertainty. So you found your joy in books.
Yes, I still do.
You know, and I love books too because it will take you through the pages of a book. And that's wonderful. So how did you get into the area of loneliness and trying to help people overcome loneliness?
Well, it's a long story, and the most, shall I say, exciting adventure for me was about 11 years ago.
Okay.
When my husband was out of town and I was home, and I was invited to go out, pick someone up in Michigan, and the stranger was actually a physician. I've written this. It's going to be published, and it's just a little chapter, but it was really eye-opening for me to realize after this person had left how I was blocking my own joy. I came to an awareness that I was just, you just come to awareness that what you really want in life is something more than what you've been allowing as possible. So when that person left, I was in what I would call some emotional turmoil. So he recommended a book called Power Versus by David R. Hawkins. It's a a classic about transformation. Okay. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, well, I know David Hawkins.
David R. Hawkins.
Yeah. Was it the same David Hawkins, the gentleman that had the voice box, and or a different one?
He was a psychiatrist.
Oh, okay.
A psychiatrist. And yeah, he had these experiences as a young child, but it's basically in a way that there's levels of consciousness and that we can really access this. It's available to everyone.
And well, so this a total stranger caused an epiphany.
Yeah.
You had an aha moment. Was it stemmed from conversation? Was it just their mere presence? You know, how did you make that initial connection to, you know, really kind of take it to that next step?
It's just a perception by me that I could be loved and accepted.
So this person that you met, this random stranger,
we had engaging conversations, even though this random stranger was, you know, not well. But I wasn't well either, in the sense that I had a lack of connection to who I am and what was possible for me. I mean, we often know what's possible because we just don't have the awareness or the imagination to really see that there's more possible and that we can have it, that we can invite it into our lives. And I mean, I've had probably been told as a teenager that if you want to be a friend or have a friend, that you need to be a friend, but it really doesn't click in your brain sometimes until, you know, you have this total epiphany and you don't even know how you attracted it. But we all attract.
The ambulance is not coming to get somebody in your building, are they? I hear the ambulance.
Yeah, sorry.
thank God for EMTs, okay? I don't know what we would do without them. I don't know what we would do. Do you live near a hospital or something?
No, but there's a fire department near me.
Oh, okay. But you were a nurse?
Yes.
You were a nurse for how many years?
20, let's see. Probably not even 20, probably 18. I've been in healthcare my whole life, though. Okay. I've been in healthcare as a social worker for the state of Illinois.
Why do you do this? I love social workers, too, because you know what? I see a lot of parallels. Okay.
Yeah, they call us caseworkers. I don't have a master's in social work, but they call us caseworkers, case managers, whatever. Yeah.
Well, you know what? And the reason why I say this, Agnes, I see a lot of synergies. You grew up in an orphanage, and then you went into foster care. So you see on the flip side what it is and what is required to love and to nurture and what is needed, and to use your imagination. Then you go into social work. Well, you had a lot of experience with social workers, I'm sure, in and out of your life. You understand what that is and what it took to be a good, caring social worker. Because, you know, you got to be more than a stack of papers on somebody's desk. You're a living, breathing human being, and you're a child. And a lot of times they want the children to get back with their biological parents, and for whatever reason, maybe they can't. So you understand from a compassionate side what that took. In addition to that, you took all of this and then you started to care for people physically. And you've seen a lot of transition, a lot of life, a lot of death, a lot of, you know, energetic work, a lot of healing. So you have a wealth of knowledge. So when it comes to this area of loneliness, how did you really start working with people? Because again, like I said, you can be alone but not lonely. But I do have a compassion. You know, my mother passed away here in our home. My mother was 91 years old and she had never stayed by herself. She had never stayed by herself. And if I had for whatever reason, put her in a facility for them to take care of her, she wouldn't last 48 hours. You know? So what is it about this thing called loneliness that you can help people break through?
Well, for me, it was, first of all, a question of being aware. And there's different forms of loneliness. And I just want to just share some statistics, if I may, about loneliness.
Yes, please.
According to Cigna Global Health, before the pandemic, 61% of Americans voiced feeling lonely sometimes or always. And according to RP, it doesn't matter if you're young, old, or married or not. 28% of those in the first year of marriage voice some feelings of loneliness. And 28% of those married over 20 years also voice feeling lonely. And it really affects all levels of society. This is really about how we connect and have awareness of our potential.
And well, you know, it's odd that you say that, you know, 28% of people that are married, you just hooked up with a partner and you're still feeling isolated and alone.
I was, yes. I've been married 53, almost 54 years.
Wow.
And yes, it was a long journey.
Wow. How did you find the connection? You know, how did you say, I want to feel something different? And you keep using the word awareness. Define awareness for me. You know, is it, everybody's not going to have the epiphany you had in that car that day, but is it, you know, knowing that you're sad, knowing that you're depressed, what is the feeling?
Well, I mean, the feeling was when I was 40, I wrote in a little diary and I never wrote back there again, because basically I was taking my awareness to a negative thing. I said, I have no friends. And that was just a perception that I wasn't connected to myself, to my inner power, my inner potential to connect. And it's really, you know, it's really there in all of us, that awareness that we need to connect. So after I had that feeling, you know, back in my 40s, it took me, you know, fast forward another 20 years, that one connection, that one book, and things start plopping in your life. From, you know, I met a person at a networking group. They invited me to the spiritual connection in Des Plaines. It was a meetup for healers. So I said yes to whatever, you know. I made new friends there. I said yes to theta healing. So I took multiple classes in theta healing. And that is a modality, a healing modality. And it's really about our second issue of why we don't connect or and that's because we have limiting beliefs. And those limiting beliefs are in us. They're programmed from our parents and our ancestors. It goes back many generations because
epigenetics. Everybody I'm talking to is epigenetics. It, you know, and they're trying to break that generational trauma. But Agnes, it's not easy. Number one, people don't know what their ancestors went through. Okay. So to come up and say one day, abracadabra, okay, I've got you in this meditative state, or, you know, you're dealing with your subconscious mind, and now all of a sudden you see all of this anxiety, that can be pretty scary too. You can look at yourself and say, you know what, am I cuckoo crazy, or is this really happening to me? So it's, you know, you're dealing in two realms. Would you agree?
Yes, but yeah, we can create, yes, but in the end, it's about that awareness that we have these beliefs and that they hold us back from that joy. So theta healing is about releasing these beliefs, sort of like hypnosis. I call theta healing hypnosis on steroids.
Oh, boy.
No, they're not so different, but yeah, we are trained to really access the sense to draw out limiting core beliefs. What we call core is, you know, the bottom, the most significant. Yeah, one of them is about beliefs about our worth and value. That affects our confidence, everything. So
how did your brother and sister fare out? Did they ever find awareness? Did they ever find, you know, that they were lonely or sad, you know, even though you had each other?
Well, thank you for asking, because that points to, yes, they have very little awareness, either one of them. And, you know, I was gifted with more probably awareness, but I want to say that loneliness hides. People won't often admit their loneliness. They'll manifest it in terms of me, for instance, busyness. It's always, if you're a mom, a parent, there's always tasks, you know, and I was the one who bent over backwards to take care of other people, including my family. So where there's busyness, there's procrastination. And one of the most significant issues, according to Dr. Lisa Rankin, who says that the number one cause of health issues is actually loneliness. So, And both of my siblings created health issues, serious. I created some for myself, but I consider myself now like a sort of a paragon of health. But yes.
Well, you went into the healthcare profession. So, you know, you really dove deep into it to try to find answers. You know, I see people, or, and I'm just generalizing brains, don't get all crunchy. But, you know, I see people that go into the psychology or psychotherapy because they have been through therapy or they're looking for an answer. I see people that go into, you know, holistic because they're looking for alternatives. They've had, you know, problems with standardized Western medicine, or they don't believe in the philosophy. They're change agents. They're influencers and impactors, and the world needs that. And so I'm glad that you have decided to work with people. But give us some key tips. Give us one or two takeaways that we could have if we want to break through the loneliness. Okay, we're aware of it. We figured it out. Okay, I'm lonely, I'm sad, I'm depressed. Now what do I do?
So yes, there's a lot that we can do. Just say that when I was a nurse, my awareness was immediately that what traditional healthcare said and offered, that I didn't want to participate in that because I didn't. And I also realized that very few people end up in nursing homes or whatever, that there's a lot of people that go, you know, young or whatever. But really, the medical texts traditionally said, when I was in school, the cause, excuse me, of arthritis and hypertension is unknown. And I didn't resonate with that kind of answer. And I mean, lo and behold, in, you know, like I'd say 16, 18 years ago, I got invited by a group of nurses in this company. So I got a little education from this Japanese wellness group of nurses about how that health is something that we create. It's something that we need to maintain. We don't wait for disease to happen. We have to constantly work on ourselves and, you know, love ourselves.
Right.
So that we don't have disease. Because one of my favorite teachers, Joe Dispenza, says that all disease is a lowering of frequency. So the higher our awareness and the more positive our thoughts and feelings are, our beliefs, the less disease we attract.
So it's, and that's why they call it dis-ease.
Yes.
You are not at ease. You are diseased, and it is a hot mess. You know, and it can manifest into so many different things. It can make you angry. It can make you turn to drugs and alcohol. It can make you be mean to your kids. It can make you be mean to yourself. But there's joy on the other side. So, Brains, I encourage you to take a look at your loneliness. How does it make you feel? Why don't you journal it? Write it down in a book, like Agnes did. And then reflect upon it in a couple days and say, am I still in the same place? What's causing me to feel this? Is it what I'm eating? Is it who I'm hanging around? Is it that outside influence, that noise that's rattling around in my head? What is it that's going to make me feel better? You may not jump from loneliness to happiness right away, but you can find a place called contentment. And that's where you look at yourself in the mirror and say, you know what? I'm worthy. Start with that. I'm beautiful. I'm kind. I'm smart. I'm loved. You know, positive affirmations. You got to talk to yourself. You got to change that conversation that's running around in your brain. Agnes, you have been a wealth of information. Thank you so much. You are such a beautiful guest, and I'm so glad to have you here because, again, it makes me think about, you know, when I'm lonely, sometimes I be in a room full of people, and I still feel like I'm by myself. So tell my Brains how to get in contact with you if they want to work with you. And you got a book coming out too. Tell us a little bit about, you know, when that's going to be released.
Well, thank you, April. My website is miraclesinwellness.com, and I want to gift everyone here or who listens with my top 10 ways to have more joy and connection. It's a free download, and I created this because this is how I empowered myself to have joy and connection. It's the story of my journey. There's different ways to connect to ourselves, and I love the Louise Hay strategy of looking yourself straight in the mirror, straight in the eyes, and say, I love myself.
Oh, yeah.
And say it often, and even if you don't believe it, you're really reprogramming your subconscious mind information. It's and there's another free gift on my site too about just having more love for yourself.
And Brains, if you don't love yourself, me and Agnes love you right here on the edge. We're loving you 110%. Don't feel like you're alone. Leave us a comment. If you want us to, you know, chat with you or, you know, do a Zoom with you to make you feel better, we're here for you, to support you, to encourage you, to uplift you. You know, we're not crabs in a barrel. We're not trying to pull you down. We're trying to raise you up on the frequency here on the edge. So thank you, Agnes, for being here with me. I appreciate you, value you, and love you dearly and completely. You know, I'm glad that you're right near the fire department. I don't have to worry about nothing catching on fire. And Brains, I need you to go in and subscribe right now to everything, especially that YouTube channel and Blog Talk. We want the numbers to represent our listenership. You know, come on, make a commitment. That's what life is about, right, Agnes? Is making a commitment.
Yes, yes, yes. And connect to a whole bunch of people, because not one person is totally going to make you happy. It's about how you feel about yourself and who you attract. And don't expect one person to meet all your needs, because the world is full of beautiful people like you, April. So thank you.
And like you, Agnes. Thank you so much for being here on the edge, baby. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye, Brains.
Bye.